you for visiting HawkeyeDrive.com, your stop for Iowa football and men's basketball content. I'm Brendan Stiles, and welcome to our fifth edition this season of the Talking Hawks podcast, exclusively on HawkeyeDrive.com. That was a crazy game last Saturday at Kinnick Stadium. And crazy not in terms of just, like, not the crazy from what you saw with Iowa playing Pitt, but just as far as how it started out and just some of the things that you saw from Iowa that seemed pretty uncharacteristic. Hawkeyes got the ball to start the game last week against ULM. First of all, Iowa won the game 45-17, did so in a fashion I think many people were expecting them to do, or at least were hoping that they would, if not expecting them to do. It starts out with them getting the ball, and they run no huddle. They carried over that no huddle that they ran against Pitt into this game last Saturday against ULM, and it worked. It worked very successfully. James Vandenberg completed four passes on that opening drive and then punched it in from 1 yard out on fourth and goal, made it 7-0. ULM got a field goal on its opening drive, made it 7-3. Iowa faced a fourth and one from its own 49-yard line, and Vandenberg, they actually decided to go for it there, which really caught me by surprise, just because I would say, you know, at least 97 or 98 times out of 100, you're going to see Iowa punt in that situation. That was one of those two or three times that you see the Hawkeyes go for it, and they did. And Vandenberg picked up the first down, and Iowa was able to score again and made it a 14-3 game. And really, from that point on, it was never close. It was never a close game. No one ever felt like you never had that feeling that ULM was going to come back. It was 28-3 at halftime. You had two touchdown passes there in the first half that Vandenberg threw to Marvin McNutt, both of which were on fade routes. The first was just a perfectly thrown ball by James. And then the second one, I thought McNutt he made a catch that you see an NFL receiver making. You know, and just going up for the ball at the highest point, if you will, and just coming down with it and just showing off his strength as he caught the ball. Marcus Coker had a really good game. He bounced back, had over 100 yards rushing. Vandenberg, I believe, threw for 270 yards last Saturday against ULM. McNutt had the two touchdown catches. He had 100 yards receiving, and he's now one touchdown away from tying the school record, or one touchdown catch away from tying the school record set by both Danon Hughes and Tim Dwight, 21 career TD receptions. Two more will break it. And really, to me, that's a remarkable story when you consider that Marvin McNutt was a guy that came in as a quarterback. And that's what Iowa recruited him as. In 2008, he was in that. There were some people clamoring for him to maybe be the QB instead of Jay Christensen or Ricky Stanzi. And then eventually he made the move over to receiver when Ricky emerged as the guy there in 2008. And that's a move that's really paid off for Iowa over the last few years between the catch that he made against Michigan State 2 years ago and just what he's been able to do since then and just really elevate himself into arguably one of the best receivers that Iowa's had in years. You know, you might even have to go back to Tim Dwight or, you know, there's definitely other names as well, but just what Marvin's been able to accomplish over the last couple of years, it's just really remarkable when you put it all in perspective. Then the other performance that really needs to be recognized is Thomas Nardo. Had 12 on defensive line. He made his second career start last Saturday. He was one of those guys that, you know, kind of came in with the personnel changes against Pitt. He started last Saturday against the Warhawks, had 12 tackles, six of which were solo, and two for a loss of yards. I mean, just really, you know, had a presence on that D line. And if he can continue to play like that, then that's going to be huge for Iowa going, you know, down the road here with that D line, because that was a huge question mark coming into this season. I still think that the defense, there's some concerns, but if these guys continue to play together like they have the last couple weeks, maybe it gets better and maybe it turns out to be a decent defense. We'll have to wait and see. But I think Iowa fans have to definitely be encouraged by the play that they saw from Tom Nardo there last Saturday. And just, again, if he could be consistent like that, maybe not necessarily getting 12 tackles a game, but if he could get in there, maybe, you know, provide like 7 or 8 tackles a game, it's really going to help the defense over the long haul here as they, you know, go through the grind that is the Big Ten season. Now, Iowa does have a bye this week. And really, it's hard to say whether or not this is a good week for them to have it. It's not really something that I can think of and say, okay, this is a good week, this is a bad week to have it. I do know that they've struggled coming out of bye weeks over the years. They were able to beat Michigan last year coming off a bye, but even that game, they got off to a slow start. And that's really going to be the challenge next week when Iowa goes to Penn State is just, you know, not letting Penn State, you know, capitalize on that early momentum that they're going to have. As far as the Big Ten itself goes, this is a huge week. Because even though Iowa isn't playing, everyone's going to have a chance here to just see what the future of this conference is going to look like. Because you have these two divisions now, it changes everything. There are 3 games in the Big Ten this week. They're all on the HawkeyeDrive.com Pick'em, where you have Northwestern Illinois, Michigan State, Ohio State, Nebraska, Wisconsin. That Nebraska Wisconsin game is huge. I mean, both those teams are in the top 10. Many, including myself, have tabbed them to be the Big Ten championship game that we're going to see here in December. But really, I mean, it changes the rooting interest for Iowa fans even. If you're an Iowa fan, you want all the home teams to win those 3 games. You want Illinois to beat Northwestern. You want Ohio State to beat Michigan State. And you want Wisconsin to beat Nebraska. And the reason is because of the divisional format. You know, Minnesota, Michigan, somebody's got to win that game. Someone's going to win that game. So one of those teams is going to be 1-0, probably Michigan. But if those other 3 teams, Michigan State, Northwestern, and Nebraska, if they're all 0-1, suddenly you're talking about Iowa being in second place in that division without even playing a game. And then it's just a matter of Iowa just handling its business. And if it does that, it's going to be in a good position. So from that standpoint, maybe this is a good week for them to have a bye. We'll have to just wait and see how that turns out. But nevertheless, Iowa completes non-conference play 3-1, have their bye this week. We don't have any guests on the podcast this week with this being a bye, but we do have the segment with Chris Rowell, former Iowa defensive back. He will be joining me to discuss last week's game as well as discuss just how bye weeks go for the players in general and for the coaching staff. And he'll also discuss the HawkeyeDrive.com pick'em games for this week, which, by the way, if you haven't submitted your picks for that, you still have time. The deadline is Friday. Just go to HawkeyeDrive.com. Just hover over the page 24 Heisman Road. You'll see the page for the pick'em. Click on that. List of 10 games. There's no Iowa game this week. So you don't have to include a score. Just send the 10 winners, email them to HawkeyeDrive@gmail.com, and if you win, you'll get a prize. It's pretty simple this week. Next week, we will go back to the tiebreaker format since Iowa will be playing Penn State. But when we come back, Chris Rowell will join me to just discuss things in general with college football. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Talking Hawks podcast exclusively on HawkeyeDrive.com. I'm Brendan Stiles. I'm back here for a weekly segment with former Iowa defensive back Chris Rowell. And Chris, before I get into talking about last week's game, I do want to ask because you were in West Virginia watching your younger brother play for the Mountaineers. They were playing LSU last week. You were at the game. How would you just describe that experience you had last weekend being in Morgantown for that?
Well, the experience there was, I would say it was very similar to Kinnick, where the crowd was there. They were very energized. The game didn't go the way that we hoped that it had gone, but I'd say that the crowd was there. They cheered the guys on throughout the game. It wasn't really no silent moment, really, outside of that kickoff that was returned that pretty much put the nail in the coffin against West Virginia. But legends was there, Airman Zerwe, Beasley, Major Harris, a couple other guys, and so on, some of the legends, Jared Brown. The biggest thing that I took from there is that their tailgate is very similar, but they tailgate on heels, which is kind of weird.
I got to ask, when you because I know you were a part of a big game when you played at Iowa against Ohio State your redshirt freshman season. Watching your brother being on the sidelines there for West Virginia on Saturday night, was it more difficult for you just kind of seeing a similar atmosphere but knowing you couldn't really do as much about it, whereas when you're playing, you know, you could be out there making a big play that changes a game?
Well, actually, this is a unique question that you asked me. This is actually my first time I ever seen my brother live. Wow. not actually playing side to side with him, which I actually played with him his freshman year in high school, my senior year. But it was a completely different experience. Like you say, you feel helpless when you're not be able to go out there and help out a team win, and for the crowd and also for the team, the university and stuff like that in the conference. And the biggest thing I seen with their team is that they have offense. Another thing I broke down, they have offense. Their defense is not your traditional defense with a 3-3-5. You ask us, hey, where is that other tackle at? And will they be able to withstand LSU run? And I kept saying that, oh, LSU is going to run a ball. They're going to run a ball. They didn't really run as much as I thought they were and put West Virginia away. But West Virginia had a lot of fight in them. But the biggest thing is that Geno Smith had a lot of yards he had passed, but it doesn't look good when you lose.
Now, I'll transition it to what happened here over the weekend. One thing that we were talking about last week was how we both felt that Iowa needed to get off to a fast start and kind of carry that momentum it gained in the fourth quarter of that game against Pitt. Hawkeyes were able to do so. They actually went a little uncharacteristic, if you will. They broke out the no-huddle opening drive, scored a touchdown. The guys on the defense are saying that really set the tone for them, just seeing the offense go right down the field, make it 7-0. And basically, it was a game that Iowa was in complete domination of from start to finish. Just what did you take away when you at least heard about the game? Maybe, I don't know if you watched a replay of it or not, but just from what you've seen and what you heard, what was kind of your takeaway from last weekend?
From what I've seen, late night game, usually around 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning when I got back home from work, I think it was Sunday. One thing that I seen was that Iowa, we established everything that we needed to establish, just like I told you. I knew that we would see some kind of hurry-up offense here and there, but like you say, as often as it was, I was like, wow, this is amazing. But with a week like this, just to get our feet back on the ground and running, we needed stuff like this to see what would work, what wouldn't work, what a quality team that we would play. You know, it's not a Alabama or another Minnesota team that where we say, okay, we need to find out where we need to find. But this team right here, we played Louisiana Monroe. They played at Florida State team, like you said, and a TCU team, like you said. They were in the TCU game into halftime or whatnot. Florida State just pretty much blew them out of water. But one thing that I took is that those guys fought. Their offense is pretty darn good. They're going to make some noise in the Sun Belt here, but not in Kinnick Stadium, as I've seen like this past week. But another thing that I took back was Tom Nardo. I've seen on the paper that we were going to talk about, and he made a huge impact. It seems like him and Jordan Bernstein has brought a nice little fire. We see the rotation of the D-line or whatnot, and I'm going to stop there so you can be able to get to the next topic.
Yeah, and you mentioned Tom Nardo, looking at the sheet of questions I put together. I did want to ask you about him because he had 12 tackles. He was named the Big Ten's Defensive Player of the Week, and he's really a guy that, you know, this is kind of his opportunity now because he was behind players like Carl Klug, Christian Ballard these last few years, and now he's getting a chance as a fifth-year senior to come in there. He was a walk-on as well, and just be able to – ever since he's came in the starting lineup, he's had an impact. And the question I wanted to ask you was just what – it was like for you to have him as a teammate, because I would imagine you went through many practices, you got to know him very well, and you just kind of see the work that he's put in now finally kind of paying off for him.
Well, I was going to say one thing that I can say about Tom Nardo is he's a guy that's far away from home. He's from Pennsylvania, just like me from Ohio. It's a little bit farther. He was a walk-on, which make it a little bit more tough for him to actually go out there and be able to make a team. And you forgot one guy that Tom Nardo actually backed up also, that he was pretty much pounded in depth chart, was Mitch King. Yep. So it was no way that he actually played when Mitch King was still here and Matt Kroll or whatnot. You listed Carl Klug and Christian Ballard, but we had some other guys that was in front of him his younger years, so he actually had a chance to be able to study under these guys. So with guys like Carl Klug and Dominic Alves and Tom Nardo, they play with some really good players in front of them. As we see Mitch King and Matt Kroll in the league right now in the NFL. So it's not just these guys were sitting here waiting their turn, but they had some dynamite guys that were years upon years starters.
The other player I want to ask you about, and this is shifting over to the offensive side of the ball, is Marvin McNutt, because he's now two touchdown catches away from becoming Iowa's all-time leader. And just kind of putting things in perspective, he was recruited as a quarterback. He was a quarterback in 2007 before he made the switch when he was a redshirt freshman. Just when you see him evolve into suddenly he's now this guy that one became the one receiver that Ferentz was the most confident about coming out of fall camp and just basically becoming like arguably one of the top wide receivers in the conference, not just, you know, at Iowa, can seeing where he came from being a quarterback that was, you know, some people were clamoring should start ahead of Jay Christensen and even Ricky Stanzi, you know, early on. Just what do you take away from just seeing this whole evolution from the Marvin that came in when you were still playing to now where he's at?
Oh, starting back when Marvin was a quarterback, I would look at Marvin as like, okay, this guy, he just needed to polish up a little bit, you know. As coming in as a freshman, he had a raw arm, you know, and like, you know, as a freshman, you just sit there and try to get the playbook under and studying or whatnot. But the biggest thing with Marvin I seen was that a little bit into his freshman year, just like Arvell Nelson played receiver also, just so they'd be able to go out there and not get bored sitting there holding the clipboard or whatnot. So guys like Marvin, guys like Arvell Nelson, they were able to go out there and help out the practice squad or either help out the second team with receivers or something if a receiver needed a blow or something. So I think the evolution of Marvin is that I'd never seen a receiver coming until he actually started going and making some plays and sitting there just giving Coach Parker a fit, Coach Ferentz a great receiver now. I would say that Marvin has been one of the better receivers that I didn't see here yet this year. I know we have Blackman down at OSU, and we have other guys in the country. But Marvin has not only helped himself, but he actually helped the team. We have KMM. We have Keenan Davis. We arguably have the best, I would say, the best receiving crew core in the Big Ten.
Now, I know you didn't get a chance to see it, but one thing I saw you tweeted Saturday before you left for West Virginia was you were hoping that people in the crowd that were going to the game would show support for Brett Greenwood and wear green for, obviously, the story is well documented now. He collapses in the hospital, has been in the hospital for a few weeks. The crowd, for the most part, responded. It wasn't completely green, but I would say close to half the stadium was wearing green. And the story that came after the game, his parents are actually in the locker room talking with the team afterwards. They were updating the condition, just letting them know that he was thinking about all of them. It sounds like he's out of his coma. Your former teammate Colin Sandeman tweeted on Monday, I believe, that he actually had cracked a smile and was blinking his eyes for the first time on Saturday. So great news there. What I wanted to ask you is just your response to seeing the fans come out and show that sort of support for a guy that you really got to know being a teammate of his for 4 years and being a defensive back like him.
Well, I would say one of the biggest things is that fans really don't know a lot about Greenwood, just like some of our teammates don't really know about Greenwood. That wasn't a defensive back. Greenwood was a hard worker. That was one of the biggest things that I know. He studied hard. He worked hard off the field, not only for football, but also school. I think Greenwood is a very, very good guy. Greenwood was a quiet guy. You really haven't seen much of him talking. The first time I actually seen him talking was like his redshirt freshman year, where he started to start right after Marcus Wilson had left or whatnot. And I was like, this guy's starting to talk? It's kind of weird. But Greenwood, he's not the most vocal leader, but he's a big-time leader. He helped out Tyler Sass as we see him evolve. Greenwood's a he was a very, very caring guy. He always, if you needed anything, you can count on him to help you out. If he was able to help you out, for the most part, he did. But studying film was one thing that I can take away from Greenwood. I think that's why he took a lot of things to the next level. What separated him from another guy on the second team or third team or so, that was the biggest, and it was a big wide gap of him studying film. I'm sure he studied film as much as most NFL pros on top of just school. And I think the response to the fans is just, it was crazy. I seen all kinds of green shirts, loud green, lime green, kiss me, I'm a Hawkeye shirt, Sean Green's mean green game, and all that stuff. I thought it was a great response of just seeing the crowd. I seen a couple pictures, which was really cool. A lot of people had spelled his name or whatnot, but that was great support.
Now to transition here, Iowa is entering the bye week. You had a couple of these when you played. For you, one thing that the players are talking about this week is how really this is a chance for them to just focus on fundamentals, if nothing else. Would you agree that that's kind of like the big thing that you want to do here when you are in practice?
A bye week is pretty much a very, very, very mini, I would say, it goes back to spring ball. Mm-hmm. That's what it goes back to. I think that Coach Ferentz would try to get the guys sit here and get back to fundamentals, get to see who do we have here from this day on, and see who we got we can bring in Big Ten conference-wise. Sharpen up the special teams. Find out, you know, who's our core guys. You got to find our core guys right now and find the guys that can help the core guys. I think the biggest thing, as I told you last week, is that we have to beat the bye week. We beat the bye week, we're in good shape, and especially coming out running against Penn State at Penn State. The last time I know that we played Penn State at 2:30, it was not a pretty game, and I really feel that Coach Ferentz know from experience, being a head coach 13 years, coming out of a bye week is a huge deal. He always expressed a bye week. We always take game to game, and then we got either 4 or 5 games or whatever it is to get to the bye week. We focus on the bye week, and then we focus at the end of the run for the Big Ten title or whatever it is left out there for us. So Coach Ferentz had those guys focused, and today would be a big-time work day, especially for the younger guys. The starters might have a little bit of rest and try to sharpen their skills, try to get the guys that's injured. Let's get those guys together. We're going to see a lot, and hopefully we see the transition of the bye week next week into the game to be able to go out there and compete with Penn State and hopefully bring a win back.
It's funny you mention that, because that's one thing that I kind of noticed on Tuesday when they granted some player interviews towards the end of the team's practice. And when we got there, what we noticed was a lot of the starters are already like out, either leaving or they were being there for interviews, where it looked like a lot of the scout team players or some of the younger players, as you mentioned, were the ones that Ferentz is really working the hardest. The one thing I would ask you too is just with this week, was it something that when you got to it, you felt a little bit of relief, how would players normally spend it? Would they be watching other football games? Would they just try to get away from it completely altogether, maybe go back home, visit families? How would you approach it?
I think it depends. We have Friday, Saturday off. We try to get some work done on Sunday just because we didn't play Saturday or whatnot, just to get a little rest. But I think it just depends on if you're able to go back home or either just be able to sit there and watch games. I pretty much watch games or hang out with a couple teammates or whatnot and watch some games. But the biggest thing, the biggest approach is just getting rest. You have to get the rest that you can get at the time. If you don't get any rest, you're not helping yourself or the team out, because it's pretty much cheating your team if you're not being able to sit there and get as much rest as you can for this long run.
And I guess just the final question I have for you here regarding bye weeks. The coaches, obviously, you hear people say, yeah, this is coming at a great time. But is it one of those things where it's like this really is the perfect time for this team to be having a bye week? Or is that just sort of a thing where it doesn't matter when the bye week is? It's just it's something that you do try to take full advantage of, as you say.
Well, I think it's just sometimes it depends on the caliber of the team and it depends on how the coach like it or whatnot. I think it's fortunate that a team like this year's Hawkeyes and also one year that I had where it just fell right there in the middle of the season or towards more of your load of the Big Ten games. I think it was it's a great week actually this week where it falls in the middle of the season. You get your preseason teams that out the way, you know, your Iowa States and Pittsburghs and so on, and then you can be able to sit there, focus on you, and then you go to the Big Ten schedule. I think it can help, yes, and it can't help also. You can progress or regress. If they were to play Penn State this week and then get into a bye week, I thought that would be pretty cool also. But just like Coach Ferentz always tell us, you got to beat the bye week. And if it doesn't matter where it falls, but it actually fell at the right time where we can sit here and think about what have we done so far this year. And also getting ready, getting to Big Ten. I wish, like I said, I wish Penn State was actually this week and the bye week is next week. All right, to figure out, all right, this is how we stack against Penn State and this is how Penn State fared against other people and so on or whatnot. But I really feel that you just got to beat the bye week.
With that in mind, I know there isn't any Iowa game this week, but are you ready to still participate in our pick 'em here?
Oh, yeah, I'm ready to get back into the regiment that we have and just get back. I've been making some crazy picks I see here, yeah. And I'm like sitting here scratching my head like, oh, man, have I been doing my research? Have I been doing anything wrong or right? Am I just saying things just to say things? A couple picks, yes, but I'm ready to sit here and just dominate you and the fans.
All right. Well, we'll get right to it here. First of all, I just want to congratulate last week's winner, Tim Carty of Iowa City. There was actually a four-way tie for first place, but he had the closest final score to the Iowa game. He had 41-14. It was 45-17. So, Tim, congratulations. Again, there is no Iowa game this week, so there's no tiebreaker. So there could be four winners if there's a four-way tie again. But we'll jump right into the games here.
I would like to just throw in a curveball. Anyone that wears an extra large shirt, I will be able to give this week. And I would say for you have to decide the tiebreaker if you want to. But I'm going to just throw in a nice Hawkeye shirt from when I actually played, fresh, brand new from Coach Herb, special teams player of the week or whatnot. I would say the game that we want to focus this on, if it comes down to a tiebreaker or whatnot, the Nebraska-Wisconsin game.
I'm okay with that if everyone else out there is. So we'll go ahead and plan that in then. So yeah, if you win, we'll have a tiebreaker. Well, I guess we don't really have a score though on the Nebraska Wisconsin game. So should it just be whoever picks them to win?
I would just say the best record.
Best record? Okay. Well, but what if there's more than one team?
You decide.
Okay. That sounds good. So, I guess there will be a T-shirt for someone who wins.
I was going to say, well, yeah, we have to actually put in the score if it's an actual tiebreaker. Then, if you think about it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's what I'm thinking too. But I don't know. I've already gotten some submissions that don't have score, so I don't know if it's something that we can fit in now. But
well, we'll go with the best record. If not, we'll just take this shirt and put on another shirt next week also and put that in a resume.
All right. Well, and I'll tell you what, if we have a sole winner next week, for sure, we'll do what you're saying here.
All right.
For sure. So we'll start off here with a game that's actually taking place at Jerry World down in Arlington, Texas. Texas A&M, Arkansas, both teams are ranked. A&M's 14th, Arkansas's 18th. Both teams are coming off tough losses last week. A&M had a 20-3 lead there on Oklahoma State before the Cowboys decided to make me look like a genius and won 30-29. And then Arkansas just got flat-out dominated by Alabama. But now these two teams are meeting. A&M's actually going to be in the SEC next year. That is official now. To me, I look at this game and I'm leaning towards A&M. I actually had a really tough time on this game, but I'm leaning towards A&M because I think the tandem that you have there, Tannehill and Cyrus Gray at running back, I think they're going to be able to get yards on the ground here on Arkansas's defense. And I also look at it as A&M, it's one of those things where they just played a bad half of football, really, whereas Arkansas, they just flat out lost to a better team. And I think these two teams are fairly even, but I also think there's going to be some incentive for A&M here as well, just with the fact that they are going into the SEC next year. They're playing an SEC opponent. They want to put on a solid performance. They want to leave a lasting impression on the conference that they're about to enter. So with that in mind, I just feel like this is a week that Texas A&M will bounce back and take care of Arkansas.
I agree with you with Texas Tech bouncing back. I mean, Texas A&M bouncing back. I really feel that they actually played a terrible half of football. That you couldn't really break down as bad as they did, just like Pittsburgh did against the Hawks. I really feel that Arkansas is not what we think they are. Just like I figure that Arkansas is a very similar team to Oklahoma State. I told you before that Oklahoma State doesn't have a defense, and we've seen that last week. And that's going to hurt them down the line, especially when they have to play a team like Oklahoma. I just feel that A&M is home. Arkansas is really close to Jerry World, but I really think A&M, this is the 12th man once again, I'm going to say for the second week, A&M is going to pull this one off in Jerry's World.
All right. Well, and it'll be interesting how many of the fans make the trip up there too, Arlington. But moving along, an actual SEC game, Mississippi State and Georgia, Battle of the Bulldogs there in Athens. Both teams are 2-2. And I look at this game and I feel like it's not so much who wins, but who ends up losing this game. Because you look at their schedules, Georgia still has to play Tennessee, Florida, and Georgia Tech, and none of those games are at home. Mississippi State still has to play South Carolina, Alabama, and Arkansas later this season. So whoever loses this game is, seriously, they're looking at a 6-6 season, realistically. So I think there's a lot of pressure on both teams. I liked Mississippi State coming into this season. I like Chris Ralph as their quarterback, and I like what Dan Mullen's been doing there with that program. But these last few weeks, they've just struggled. You know, it's like the hangover from losing that game to LSU carried over last week against Louisiana Tech. They barely beat a team from the WAC in overtime at home. Meanwhile, Georgia, I think even though they haven't really beaten anybody, they're slowly starting to figure it out. And with them being at home, I just kind of lean towards Georgia winning this game.
I would agree with you also. I'm going to take Georgia. I think Georgia lost some tough games. You know, they lost to some really good teams in South Carolina and also Boise State. I think that, like you say, Georgia hasn't really beat anyone yet. I feel that the pressure is more on Mississippi State. The reason why I say that is that if they win, yay. If they lose, here we go. It might just be the regular old Mississippi State that's, you know, the little guy that's trying to fit in with the big boys. But then Georgia, it can be devastating in a way. We can talk about Mark Richt getting his head cut off here with this game, going to 2-3. But at the same time, if Georgia win, it's a good win. No wins are bad wins, but this is a good win. Let's go to the next game because that's what you expect out of Georgia.
Yeah, and I definitely think whoever does end up losing this game, they're going to be feeling pressure the rest of the way, just given the schedules. Moving along into Big Ten play, this is an inter-division game. We got to get used to using the phrases legends and leaders now. Thank you, Jim Delaney. Northwestern is traveling to Illinois. The Illini are 4-0, ranked 24th in the country. Northwestern coming off a bye week after losing to Army in a game where Army only completed one pass for 6 yards, but controlled the clock for over two-thirds of the game, just running the ball at will on Northwestern's defense. I think that we were talking about bye weeks and how they could be beneficial. I think this came at a good time for Northwestern because it allowed Dan Persa to get back in the mix. He is going to play Saturday against Illinois from everything I've heard. And I look at the Illini, and yeah, they had a really nice win over Arizona State, but then they barely beat Western Michigan last week. That's right. And I just feel, even though that this game's in Champaign, and I know the Illini had a lot of success running the ball in Northwestern last year, that was a completely different Northwestern team And the reason I'm leaning towards picking the Wildcats in this game is simply because of the fact that Persa coming back not only ignites that offense, it ignites that defense as well. Because they were without him when they played Illinois last year, and it just looked like they gave up. Like, teams are scoring at will on Northwestern, and no one knew how to respond. Now that you have your leader back, I think it rejuvenates the entire team, not just the offense. And with that being said, I actually think Northwestern goes down there and gets it done on Saturday.
I agree with you also. It's not many games that we probably disagree with this week, but I was going to say, I know when you go on a road, you have to have a lot of focus. You know, with Dan Persis coming back, this is going to give him a lot more focus. The offense, he's going to light a fire under this offense. The defense is going to help out. Special teams probably play harder. I just feel that with them going on a road and also a interdivision rivalry, it's the state of Illinois right here at its best pride. You'd be able to beat Illinois, a top 25 team at home. It doesn't get any better right now for the season for Northwestern at the time. And I'm going to pick Northwestern. This will not be an upset, but we're still looking for Illinois to get a good win. And they probably won't have a good win for a while, but this will be a good win against Northwestern, believe it or not.
Yeah, well, and I do think they do have a good win over Arizona State right now. But I agree. I do think that this game, it's important for Illinois to win this game if people are going to continue to take them seriously down the road. I will agree with you there. Moving along here, number 15, Baylor, plays its first road game of the season, 3-0 going into Kansas State to take on a K-State team that is also 3-0 after getting a goal line stop to beat Ja'Cory Harris, the Miami Hurricanes, last week down there in Miami. I know K-State's at home, but I just can't see them stopping Baylor and Robert Griffin III. In fact, I saw a stat. You've probably seen this too. Robert Griffin III, three games this year. And granted, you can say what you will about the competition, but he has 13 touchdowns to 12 incomplete passes. He's thrown more touchdown passes than incomplete passes after three games. That's just, like, unheard of. And again, I feel like the one major concern I would have with Baylor is with this being its first road game, but I think that there's enough veteran guys there, and I think Griffin's enough of a leader that that's not something that's going to get in the way of them being able to go in there and get what I think could be a pretty convincing victory over K-State.
I was getting ready to say, K-State is a team to be reckoned with. They're undefeated, just like you said. With that stat, it's ridiculous. That was the first thing that came to my head, and when I seen that stat, I said, wow, when you think about that, you would say, hey, this guy must run a ball all the time. Yes, he runs the ball, but he also passes the rock. Any coach figure, if you can run a ball, why not just keep running a ball? Ask Georgia Tech, but that's just their offense. I'm going to agree with you once again. Baylor on the road against a very solid K-State team. I know a couple guys that actually play for K-State, but I really feel that Baylor should be able to take care of business. Yes, it's going to be a tough one. They might have a little bit of a sluggish start just because of this first game on the road. But Baylor should be able to take care of business.
And I'll make a bold prediction here. After Saturday's game, I expect Robert Griffin III to have more incomplete passes than touchdown passes. But it's 13-12 right now, so I don't think that's really going out too much on a limb. But
he's going to actually be thinking about that stat a lot, I bet, in the game. I'm sure he will think about that.
All right, now this next game, I think there might be some disagreement on here, and it's a big one in the Big Ten. Michigan State, 3-1, traveling down to Ohio State, who's also 3-1. I'll let you go first on this one, but this game being in the shoot, by the way.
I'm going to just start off, as Michael Rayburn would say back in the day here, last couple of years, you're going to say I'm going to take a homer pick, and you know what? I'm going to go with it. I'm going with Ohio State, not just because it's a homer pick, but just because off of the performance that Braxton Miller put up last week. The only thing that we haven't seen Braxton Miller last week see is some passes with touch with it. I thought Michigan State is kind of a sluggish team right now. I would have said, hey, I'm going with Michigan State if Ohio State didn't have the performance that they had and they were still struggling with the quarterback situation. But Ohio State, they got their defense back behind them last week also. I know Colorado is not a good team, but My good old buddy Simon here for the D-line, he made some noise. This guy is all over the place, just like Pat Anger was. Shout out to Pat Anger for the Colts. He was all over the field Sunday. But I figured that Ohio State would win because they're at home. Mark D'Antonio want to sit here and be able to stick it to Ohio State just because he's back in the horseshoe again because he was assistant under Tressel. But I figure that Michigan State would not be able to get their run game. Fickell would be able to sit here and say, hey, this is my signature win, and I think this will not even be a close game.
Really? Well, I will start by saying I think that this will be a close game. I think it'll be a very low scoring game. They bounced back against Colorado last week, but I'm still not completely sold on Ohio State's offense. And the fact that this is only going to be Braxton Miller's second start, but I think what also hurts them too is the fact that this is the game that when I first heard the news about those guys being suspended, and we're talking like Boom Heron, Devere Posey, Mike Adams, it would have been Terrell Pryor if he came back, but in the defensive lineman. This is the Big Ten game they're missing.
I was getting ready to say before you get into your rant and raves, I was going to say the biggest thing is that with this game, yes, these guys are going to miss this game, but if you're not sold on this offense yet, wait till Devere Posey gets back. And I think that's the biggest impact that is going to happen because, I mean, if you got Hyde, you got Hall, you got Jamal Berry already running the ball and doing pretty decent for this quarterback, wait until Devere Posey comes back.
And to be clear, I do think Ohio State's offense will get better as the season progresses because of those guys coming back. But since they're not here right now and they're not going to be playing Saturday, Michigan State, I just saw this stat earlier this week, has held teams to 172 yards. And that's the fewest of any team. So, in other words, they statistically have the top defense in the country. And with the issues that Ohio State has had moving the ball on decent teams, I just don't know how effective Ohio State's offense is going to be against Michigan State's defense. And I really feel it's one of those games where one or two big plays for the Spartans could be enough to get them a win. And I'll also say this, with that in mind, I'm going to pick Michigan State to win, but I'll say this. This is make or break for Michigan State. I really believe that because you look at their schedule. They still got to play Nebraska, Iowa, Northwestern on the road, and they also play Michigan, Wisconsin at home this month.
Do they play Penn State?
No, they do not play Penn State. But the thing with the schedule in mind, I view it almost twofold. On one hand, if they go into Ohio State and win this game, it could be kind of similar to what you guys went through when you beat Penn State 2 years ago, where it's – hey, you can go into if we can go into Ohio State and win, Nebraska, Iowa, Northwestern, those are going to pale in comparison. Whereas if they lose this game, and this is as vulnerable as Ohio State's going to be, they lose this game.
Snowball effect.
Yeah, exactly. A snowball effect, and it's suddenly if they can't beat Ohio State when Ohio State's down, how are they going to do against Michigan, Wisconsin, and Nebraska and whatnot? And with that in mind, I think the pressure is on Michigan State to win this game, but I ultimately think that they will prevail just simply because Ohio State's not going to have everybody, and I think this is where it is going to hurt them.
I was getting ready to say this is probably the most we talked about a team outside of the Hawks. I really feel that Michigan State – like you say, it's a make-or-break game. Ohio State is down, yes. Ohio State's down, but it's going to be a snowball effect if Michigan State don't win this game because it's going to be like, holy crap. All right, we can't win at Ohio State. Yes, we don't win at Ohio State very often, but at the same time is that –
this is as good a chance as they're going to get.
Ever. Oh, yeah. And I was going to say Mike Adams. Forgot all about him. That's their money, man. And – I figure if, like you say, Michigan State really needs this win because if they want to prove that they're the big boys once again, you have to do it in Ohio State. Mm-hmm. And with that said, Michigan State also haven't played competition as Ohio State did. Let's not forget that. You know, Colorado is down, yes. But Miami, on top of the small teams, let's not forget about Toledo.
Yeah. And Toledo, I mean, they just got robbed out of a victory last week. But
oh, yeah. They just filed for their victory. They don't want a moral victory, but Toledo is a legit team. Let's not forget about that. And like I said, Colorado is just they put up what they can, but at the end, they just got dominated. But let's not forget about the competition Ohio State played against now with this team that's been all over the place.
We'll just move on here, and this is the one game for sure we disagree on. Moving along, we have a rematch of the SEC Championship. Auburn visits number 10 South Carolina. The Tigers won last year. Actually, they beat them twice last year. They won at Auburn, and then they won the SEC title game en route to win a national championship. This game's in Columbia. South Carolina, I mean, if you've watched this team, Marcus Lattimore's had an amazing season up to this point. I think he's second in the country in rushing behind LaMichael James. You have him, Alshon Jeffrey, Jadeveon Clowney, Melvin Ingram, once again, had another defensive touchdown last week against Vanderbilt. Right now, I just think the Gamecocks are rolling, and I don't see them losing this game, especially with it being at home.
I was getting ready to say, South Carolina has probably been tested the most possible with their team. Yes, this is not a regular South Carolina defense that we've seen in the past with Eric Norwood and Brinkley and Captain Mutterland and Chris Culliver and so on. No, it's not a defense that South Carolina had, but this defense is still struggling outside of this D-line play, you ask me. I figure that if – I don't think Alshon Jeffrey is not even in form yet because Marcus Lattimore, his performance has been so high right now. They didn't really need him. And as we've seen that the old ball coach had took Stephen Garcia out of the game with four interceptions last week. Mm-hmm. So I figure that South Carolina needs to get on the ground running. This is a big, big test for them. And also Auburn. I know we're not talking a lot about Auburn because they're not in the spotlight, but Marcus Lattimore is the guy that we might see hold up the Heisman Trophy at the end of the season. But this is a game that he needs, and big time.
Moving along, we'll go into the ACC here. Another battle of unbeatens. Number 13, Clemson. 2 weeks in a row, we both picked against them, and they've proven us wrong. And now they're going into Blacksburg to take on number 11, Virginia Tech. I'll let you go first because I'm really torn on this game.
I was getting ready to say the biggest thing is that I watched the head coach for South Carolina be able to sit here and talk about
Clemson.
Oh, Clemson, yes, yeah. Clemson. Sit here and be able to talk on college game day live, not game to live, but college football live. Their offense is pretty dynamite. I seen that Daquan Bowers is saying something about their offense and how good it is. The quarterback is starting to get informed. Taj Boyd, I told you about, which is a pretty good
Sam
quarterback.
Watkins.
Oh, yeah, big time, Sammy Watkins. I hate to do it again, but I'm going to pick against Clemson because Virginia Tech, they don't really lose at home.
No.
And it's Virginia Tech. And they have a dynamite running back at also in Wilson. And they have a really good young quarterback. But Virginia Tech has been flying under the radar. This is the game that they get from under the radar. I really feel it. You can't fly but so high because Clemson is a team to be reckoned with.
I'll start by saying that I'm impressed by what Clemson's been able to do here these last couple weeks, beating Auburn and then beating Florida State, catching them off guard after they lost to Oklahoma 2 weeks ago. And my biggest concern, and this is why I'm going to go at Virginia Tech as well, is, like you said, this is a home game for the Hokies, but it's also the Clemson's first road game of the year. And I'm going to be very interested to see how players like Taj Boyd and Sammy Watkins handle the crowd noise and handle, you know, being able to not be in the comfortable surroundings that they've had down there at Clemson. And let's not forget, two special teams. That could play a big role in this game, and you know Virginia Tech's always going to bring it there. So I just feel like if this becomes a low-scoring game, which I don't think it necessarily will be, but if Clemson struggles offensively, Virginia Tech could win this game convincingly.
I was getting ready to say the team that comes out strong in the beginning of the game will win this game just because, like you say, special teams, anytime when Virginia Tech is at home, is going to play a big role.
Mm-hmm. Another battle of unbeatens here. Number 17, Texas, is going to Iowa State, who is 3-0. Both teams are coming off byes. Iowa State's three wins this year have been by a combined total of 8 points, which is pretty remarkable if you ask me. But they just beat UConn at UConn. Texas is coming off a win at UCLA. If Iowa State wins this game, I do think that they're going to vault into the top 25. Mm-hmm. And I think they will. I'm actually going to go with the Cyclones here because this is a big game for them. We talked about make or break for Michigan State. This could be make or break for Iowa State just because of how deep the Big 12 is this year. But they beat Texas last year in Austin. Mack Brown said that was the low point of their 5-7 season a year ago. And, you know, Texas could be coming in there thinking revenge, but there's just something about Iowa State. I just feel like, you know, am I picking them to win the Big 12? Absolutely not. But they win this game, this could set up to be a pretty strong season for Paul Rhodes. And if they're able to hang around and keep it close with Texas, I do think that they could prevail in the fourth quarter with a big play or two late in the game. And I think the Cyclones get it done.
Coming from a former Hawkeye, you know, you don't give props to Iowa State, but I tell you what, Iowa State has had a pretty good season so far this year. Like you say, with the combined wins, the margin is 8 points. This is kind of similar, huh, mm-hmm. to my senior year so far.
A little bit.
Very similar, but the team is completely different, yes. They're going against Texas. I don't think this is a make-or-break game for Iowa State. I think it's for Texas because Texas don't win this game. They're going to be scratching their heads like, hey, what the heck is going on? Especially with them turning into Colt McCoy's younger brother to be their quarterback. But I feel that this game for Iowa State is a really good game, set up at the right time. It's a measuring stick for them. Paul Rhodes already said, like we already had talked about, this is his best team. We don't know what his best team is all about yet until we play a team against Texas. I really feel that this stadium will pack. I think the crowd is going to be there more than the Iowa game for some reason. I don't know why. But I think that this will be huge for Iowa State. And they're going to talk about this for decades and decades about this if they come out with this victory. And I'm going to go with Texas because I think Texas need to come down there and show them who they are, and as everyone says, don't mess with Texas.
And I think, too, it's important for Texas to be able to focus on this game because the next 2 weeks they play Oklahoma in the Red River Shootout, and then they got Oklahoma State at home. So you really got to make sure they're not looking past this Iowa State team. Now the two big games Saturday night. Number 3 Alabama, number 12 Florida meeting in the Swamp. Both teams are undefeated. Florida's 4-0. I think people looked at their schedule and probably expected them to be 4-0. I actually heard that this is the first time that they're an underdog at home in like 8 or 9 years, which is pretty incredible. You're going back to like Ron Zook's first season as their coach there. But that being said, Florida has posted really solid numbers in the SEC. I think offensively, I think they actually lead the conference in pretty much every offensive category. However, Alabama leads the SEC in pretty much every defensive category. And I think this is a game that the Crimson Tide are going to end up winning, even though it's in Gainesville. I think Alabama wins this game because they're going to dominate the trenches. And I don't know if Brantley's going to be able to, you know, get the ball out to guys like Chris Rainey and Jeff Dempsey and allow them to make the big plays that they're usually capable of making against, you know, semi-good or mediocre defenses in the SEC. And I just think, too, if Alabama's able to do that and keep Florida's offense in check, then this could be another big game for a guy like Trent Richardson on the ground. And Alabama, if they keep the ball away from Florida's offense, the Gators just aren't going to score.
I think this is another game we disagree with. I think Florida is – no other Florida team has been doing here in the last, whatever you want to say, years upon years. I think Florida is a team that's been under the radar also this year, just like Virginia Tech and one of these next teams that we'll talk about. I was getting ready to say Florida hasn't really shown much on their offense, and Alabama has been dominating everyone pretty much this year. Florida hasn't really shown much. They've shown a spark last week of just an overall team victory. But I would say that Florida's going to win this game just because it's at home. I think the guys will get ready. And this is not our traditional Florida team that we see sit here and play against everyone. I really feel that Chris Rainey is going to have a huge – and Jeff Dempsey will have a huge impact upon this game. And I think that the quarterback, Brantley, has to have his game of his life. so far in the best game of his career if they're going to beat Alabama. And I think also just like Iowa State and just like Illinois team and Mississippi State, Florida, this can be a snowball effect also with Florida. Yes, they have a solid year, and 8-5 is not
going to be a brutal month coming up for them.
Oh, yeah. 8-5 does not sound good at all. But I really feel that Florida needs to really show up. We don't really have to say much about Alabama, as we haven't said much. Alabama is just Alabama.
And now, finally, the big game in the Big Ten. Number 8, Nebraska. Number 7, Wisconsin. I'll let you start out here. Your thoughts on this
game? I knew you were going to let me start out. You know what? I'm going to make it very fast and simple. I have a connection with one of these guys. That's the head coach. Well, actually, both of them in one way. One guy was a former Hawkeye, and one guy is from Ohio. And I'm going to go with the guy from Ohio with the black shirts. These guys are going to come out and make a statement, and that's all I got to say.
So you're taking Nebraska.
That's right.
I think this is going to be – I'll just leave it at this. I think this will be the first of two meetings between these two teams. I think Nebraska, as I've said before, I think Nebraska will win the Legends Division. I think Wisconsin will win the Leaders Division. I think these are the two best teams in the Big Ten. This time around, I'm going to go with Wisconsin because they're at home. 2 months from now, I might have a different opinion, but –
I was getting ready to say, I knew I shouldn't have made it that short, but the biggest thing with Nebraska is that Nebraska is flying under the radar also, and everyone's talking about Wisconsin and Russell Wilson and all this stuff, but let's not forget, Nebraska needs to come out and make a statement, like I said earlier, and they will make the statement. It's just that everyone always got the question upon Taylor Martinez. He's going to show up.
All right, and that's going to do it for this week's edition of the Talkin' Hawks podcast. Again, for those of you who visit HawkeyeDrive.com, if you want to sign up for a subscription, we offer a 3-day free trial. We also have monthly and yearly rates, $9.99 a month, $89.99 a year. Payments are recurring. Chris, thank you once again for joining us for this week's edition of the Talkin' Hawks podcast. And for former Iowa defensive back Chris Rao, I'm Brendan Stiles, signing out.